hold on to your butts, it's time for a new episode of Destroy All Culture, a sonic death ray from Dimension X that sounds exactly like a weekly podcast hosted by Adam P. Nave and Aiden Morgan. Exposure to Destroy All Culture is 100% fatal, so we put it on the internet. Now listen and die! Lethal effects may take up to 75 years. And here we are with episode 100 of Destroy All Culture with Aiden Morgan and me, Adam P. Nave. And just for the record, by the way, I almost said the glory.
That is funny. Our old podcast.
Yep.
Yeah, but no. This is a new podcast, and it's already 100 episodes old.
It is. Somehow that happened.
Yep, and yet here we still are.
I don't believe it myself.
I don't believe it either, but nonetheless. And in honor of our 100th episode, we have a new sponsor.
Alrighty, hit me.
Well, say Adam, has this ever happened to you? You're in the kitchen, like you've been in the kitchen,
right? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You're making spaghetti, and the water's boiling away, and you want your perfect al dente pasta, but then you turn around and you go to the sink and no strainer, but you don't know where it's gone. And as you know, kitchen strainers are the number one most mislaid item in the kitchen.
I believe that is science.
It is science. So what if your hand could be a strainer?
Ooh, just pour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And your other hand, if you wanted, could be a set of tongs.
Well, these are both capable things, but I'm not sure I want to pour boiling water over my hand and just catch pasta.
Well, here's the thing. It wouldn't be your hand. It would be a patented pasta strainer implant.
I see.
That's right. And if you like, your perfect pasta is only 2 implants away, and at Implant a Month Club, it will only take 2 months for you to get your perfect pasta. Or anything you like. Yeah, at Implant a Month Club, all you do is select from a list of interests, and during the convenient time while you're asleep, Implant a Month Club will implant things in you or on you.
This just gets more horrific as you go on.
I know. But wait, it's worse. It will actually, based on your interests, they will actually implant custom implants in you or on you or around you until you are pretty much nothing but your interests. So, and there's all kinds of like ready-made packs you can choose from. There's a summer backyard barbecue pack. There's the real fake geek girl pack.
Okay.
And there's the general kitchen pack. There's also the automotive sport club pack.
Ooh, very fancy.
Oh, I know. Yes. And I will leave it up to your imagination as to what exactly would be done to you to turn you into your interest.
That's fair. Christ.
There's even a Jack Kirby pack, and that is just messed up.
That sounds like it would be messed up. So, moving away from the sponsor. We're going to go into full spoiler territory, I think, for big time sake here.
Right.
Of course, we just saw Avengering.
Infinity War.
Or what was Infinite.
Yeah. Which I've been calling Marvel's Justice League or Thanos the movie or, whatever else.
I had at least one friend who called it Avenge War.
Avenge War. I like that. That works, too. So yeah. I think it's okay obviously lots of spoilers. We're talking about what all happens, but this won't be coming out for 1 week.
It should be fine.
So most people who listen to our podcast, like Frank, will have already seen Infinity War by the time they listen to this, to us talking
and
about it.
And if not, it'll be mentioned and we've already warned you, so.
Exactly. So it's, you've already ticked off the box in the end user license agreement. We have your information.
We're going to sell it. So that you can get implants. But, that happened. And, the first thing that, of course, I'm not sure.
I say I'm not sure. I'm exactly sure, actually. But I'm a little almost annoyed that they went so hard on the, no, it's not a two-part movie anymore. Shut up.
Yeah, and then it was like, oh, did we mention it was actually a two-part movie?
Right, and I mean, I see why they did it. You know, for the, well, they want you to be able to take each movie on its own terms and that they're going to be thematically different.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, it wasn't Empire Strikes Back and Empire Strikes Back Part 2. Like, I get it.
Right. and I think, and in the annals of modern movie deceptions, it's a pretty minor sin compared to, say, J.J. Abrams going, no, that's not Khan, that's John Harrison, you know, etc.
Right.
So, yeah. And you know, we kind of found out that we were getting a two-parter just in the run-up to this, so... I mean, I knew going in, it actually threw most of my predictions about the movie, it kind of threw them into a hat, because I was like, oh, well, maybe the things I think are going to happen aren't going to happen.
Right, well, and I kind of enjoyed it, because it was one of the things, if you knew the story, and they're like, oh, we're just doing it in one movie, you're like, how can they cram all this? And you start, and that's where, like, a lot of our predictions, you know, came from, right?
Right, right.
Like, how can they cram this all into one thing?
And they
because
barely
they
did,
said,
anyway.
Well, we're doing it in two movies... It would end about where you think it would end for the first part.
Yeah.
So even once I heard, like, oh, it's a two-part movie, I'm like, okay, well, then I get where they're going to end. They're going to do the Empire thing. They're going to end where they did. But it gave us, I think it actually helped because it did let us, and by us, I mean, you know, people who knew the story and all that, it let us kind of not feel like we knew what was happening for so long that it kind of dimmed down the love of the idea. And if you didn't know what was going on, you're like, whatever, then this ending is just like, what? Which is perfect.
You know what I really want to do? I want to find, I don't know if these people exist anymore, but I want to find somebody who knows absolutely nothing about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, or even maybe even Marvel Comics. Maybe knows Marvel Comics, but hasn't seen any of the movies and doesn't know anything about them, and I want to take them to Infinity War.
Well, you know, there's a New Yorker interview which is getting slammed around online because it's like, they just put in characters, they don't introduce them, da-da-da, and like, no one can tell what's going on. And like, even like James Gunn was like, you know, just replace certain things, like, yes, I just tuned in to Game of Thrones Season 8, and they don't introduce the characters.
Yeah,
how
exactly.
Do you know? Like,
that's
right.
That's a pretty ridiculous take, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, Mark Kermode, the British critic, actually sort of said when he was watching it that he said, you know, he said he didn't really emotionally engage with it, but he realized that lots of people in the audience who were Marvel followers, like more dedicated than him, were really, really, it was for them. And he said,
well, yeah.
So he said, you know, so I have my criticisms, but in a sense, they don't really matter because the movie's not really for me. And if it is for you, then you'll probably enjoy it very much, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and just to dig into the movie itself, one of the things I absolutely adored, I think we're going to end up bouncing around a bunch, you know, and not discuss the movie, like, in order, because that is weird.
What's... I don't remember what happened in order in that film.
I do think that, you know, A, the Russos proved to an even bigger scale what they did with Civil War, which is you can do a movie with this many characters and actually balance it. Mm-hmm. Which is incredible when you look at what they had to balance.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think...
Just their sense of like, oh, we could team up these characters, but these tones would clash too much, so we'll move this over here. Just like, just really, really well, carefully thought out bits like that.
Yeah.
You know, every character had something to do. Every character had, even if it was, again, like Civil War, even if it was a very short arc, you know, like Ant-Man's arc in Civil War is not very big.
No, it just,
you know,
kind of pops up.
But it exists. Like, he starts somewhere, he ends somewhere else. Like, there's
right.
movement.
Yeah.
And I think Civil War, even, there's movement for almost, and I'm going to say almost every character. Because I was thinking about this, and I'm like, was there any character that had no movement forward? You know, like, even, like, Black Widow, like, has movement forward in, from Civil War to this, in how she relates to, like, an Okoye, you know, who she sees in Civil War, and they're both like, you know, move aside. And then this, they're kind of partnering up. Like, it's not much movement.
Everybody gets a little something. Like, Groot sort of, like, looks up from his video game and uses
right.
his arm.
Except.
Yeah, except.
Mantis.
Yeah, Mantis doesn't seem to get much of an arc.
They still don't know what to do. Like, the way James Gunn kind of ruined that character and just made her nothing but, like, the butt of weird, like, mean jokes.
Yeah.
And kind of reduced her character to nothingness kind of follows through on this.
Yeah, that's true.
But outside of that.
Yeah.
You know, I also do love the callbacks, both the really subtle ones.
Mm-hmm.
That weren't necessarily callbacks. Like, there's one that's one of my favorite bits when I realized it. And of course the really obvious ones, like We Have a Hulk and all that.
Yeah. Yes, I like that very much.
But I think my favorite kind of subtle callback is in the first Avengers movie. Stark and is talking to Loki and just doing his little like stalling for time thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you know, you haven't heard of us, you know, Earth's Mightiest Heroes, they call it the Avengers, you know. Because if we can't save this world, then we'll be damn sure to avenge it.
Yes.
And that is the next movie.
Ah, yes.
And I thought it was a very interesting choice that we're going to take all these pieces off the board, because that's this movie, right? But what we're left with is the original core team, almost exactly.
Yeah, I noticed that. All the newer, pretty much all the newer Avengers and the newer characters were the ones who got sort of sizzled away. And so, yeah, this is where we can get some core characters and some real sacrifice.
And I mean, this is going to be the original Avengers again, in the movie version at least, plus Ant-Man, which brings it closer to the original comic Avengers, which is funny.
Interesting.
You know, actually just doing their job type of thing. Like, this is where it all comes together in the next film. And I thought that was a really nice touch, because it lets the next movie be smaller and way more personal, which opens the door for the sacrifices to have time to breathe.
Right.
And again, like this one, I bouncing back and forth, they're, God knows, I don't know about you, but like, I'm watching the movie and I'm having a good time, you know?
Yep.
From the opening bit forward, and I'm enjoying it. But then they have that little, you know, the two orders of the Black Order are attacking Vision, Scarlet Witch, and all this, and there's a shadowy figure seen in the train, and it's just like, oh, another professional show up. And it is that testament to, like, you know, here's Iron Man and Doctor Strange and, you know, Spider-Man, and they're having trouble fighting these guys.
Right.
And they're kind of barely stopping all this. And Cap and his team of people who have no powers at all just come in and just knock the fuck out of these guys.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. Yeah, that was a wonderful moment. Exactly, yeah. Also, I'd like to... from that scene reminds me, I think, of the real star of the movie, which is a sign in the movie during the romantic scene between Vision and Wanda. It's behind Vision over his shoulder. I think it's over Vision's shoulder. It just says, "We will deep fry your kebab."
Yes.
And my God, that distracted me so much. But I didn't care I'm like...
Okay, I'm glad I'm not alone with that. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah. I was like, because I, you know, the signs, like, when like one of the first things you learn as a photographer is if you're not taking a picture of a sign, don't have a sign with like legible text in a photograph, because people will just look at the sign. So when I was looking at that, I'm like, they must have wanted that in there.
Well, and I had a theory about it.
Go ahead.
Weirdly enough, I had a theory about that sign specifically. Okay, so the Russos, they have done now 3 movies for Marvel.
Yes.
And of course, they famously got their start doing Arrested Development.
Right.
So in the first movie they do, Civil War, Danny Pudi shows up. Because they also did some Community, of course. But there's also I forget where it is, but there is also an Arrested Development reference.
There, apparently, the Tobias Fünke is in the Collectors.
That's in this one. I'm just saying, Civil War, there is one.
Oh, there is, and I can't remember what it is.
Right. And then in Civil War...
Oh, I know what it is in Civil War.
Well, in Civil War, there are 2.
Oh, okay.
Because they pull out Jim... there is one, and there's a Community one. Because they pull out Jim Rash.
Right.
And then there's the stair car.
Right.
And in this one, of course, there's a fake Tobias, you know, in his blue paint and jean shorts in the collector's containment.
Right.
But I felt like, weirdly, I was just like, oh, is that like a weird, like, this is the European version of the cornholer? Like, someone's bought the rights to it. And I don't know that that's anything to do with it, but that was, like, instantly where my brain went. It was
God.
Oh, it's like an Arrested Development joke.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, that...
It's the kebab holer. I don't know. It's just...
I just love that so much. I'm like... either they deliberately put that there, or that ended up in the shot when they were setting up, like, the location, and they're like, I think we need to keep that.
Yeah, no, and it's a great move, because it works as a minor tension break.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And
so
it's
actually a really smart, weird move.
Yeah, it worked for me too. And I think also, frankly, like the romantic storyline between, you know, Scarlet Witch and Vision, is, I mean, it's they kind of hint at it in Civil War, but it doesn't. But now it's full blown. So they're asking you to sort of accept like a romance that has mostly happened off screen. And so it might be a little much just to accept. So having a weird detail in the background to distract you kind of distracts you from the fact that maybe this is not the strongest scene in the movie and that they're kind of asking you to accept a bit there.
Sure.
Anyway, but that's, you know, that's neither here nor there.
I also think character-wise, they did something very interesting and very, again, subtle and important. Because, you know, Black Panther, of course, and something that's been talked about is that Shuri is the smartest person in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But we still have to show that, like, Tony Stark ain't no slouch.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was really interesting to see, like, this movie, it's suddenly he, you know, has a little chest piece, but it's something he wears. It's not embedded in him. But he's figured out nano stuff. So now all of his armor acts like the stuff Shuri builds. And you notice his new, like, his new repulsor gauntlet things that come up look like her weapons?
Yes.
But that he's discovered this level of technology without the vibranium and independently. So he still looks like a genius compared to everyone outside of Wakanda. who has no access to this. Like, he's way above everyone else. When you get into Wakanda, of course, the stakes are raised because they have better technology. But you still have Shuri's even smarter because she's only 16 and already there.
Yeah.
So it works really well to sell both of those characters without ever saying anything.
I like that. Yeah, that makes that's a nice subtle design.
I like that.
Yeah.
There was something else that a friend pointed out to me the other day as well, that non-comic people wouldn't get the Iron Spider suit. Which did show up in the comics and is known as the Iron Spider suit.
Yes, yes.
Had those big golden arms. And
I was kind of waiting for that to show up, actually.
Was joking with a friend that they were going to do it, and he was like, no. And I'm like, they're going to do it. and they do, except here's the difference. In the comics, and it's one of those things the comic fans never liked, when it was designed and shown in the comics, it had three metal arms, which would give Spider-Man a total of 7 limbs.
Oh, yeah.
And in the movie, they were like, you know what? Is Spider. There needs to be a fourth. I just like that someone finally fixed that problem. It's meaningless, but it made me laugh.
Yeah, and it's cool to see. I always felt like that the spider arm design was always a little on the nose. I mean, even
it's
in the comic book,
right? Like, yeah. He's fairly on the nose.
Right, it's true. Yeah, he's like, hey, I'll give you some spider arms to go with your spider outfit. Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
But so I was. So when I saw it, if I hadn't already known about the spider arm thing, I might have balked at it in the movie. But when I saw it, I was like, hey, it's the spider arms. Yeah.
Well, it's something that I think that obviously isn't mentioned in the movie at all. That was in the comics as well. So when he gives Peter this armor, right? You know, the Spider-Man costume, of course, has always been red and blue. And he's like, here's this armor. And suddenly it's like red and gold. And it's like, you're such a dick, you had to put it in your own goddamn colors. And I like that this does it. It never says it. You know, it doesn't have to.
Yeah. So that, yes, exactly. Yeah, they've put a lot of thought in Infinity War into... there's a lot of thought put into so many aspects of the design.
Well,
I thought the titles were very... maybe it's like a copper plate Gothic. I can't remember the font, but it's sort of that sort of very sort of no frills, and it also looks like font titles in the.
Well,
comic.
I mean, they did roughly the same ones, except they did them smaller in this one for Civil War.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And
you
I
know, like
that's
the Civil War, they did like the full screen ones, and this one they're like, no, the scope is bigger, so the font shrinks.
Mm-hmm.
It's subtle. But it's a mental thing that really works.
Yes, exactly.
I also did like that, you know, because again they have to show characters in relation to other characters, not only, you know, in terms of like jokes or how they behave, but even characters whose relationship we know, they still have to kind of go, look, we get that You know, like, again, like Iron Man. Like, we get that, like, Tony Stark is literally not as smart as Shuri, but we need a scene with her just being like, aw, bless your heart.
Yeah, I know.
And
yeah.
We also need to see that, like, that Stark is still, like, a badass genius. The same way they're like, okay, well, Black Panther is on the level of Captain America, right? Like, physically,
right.
In terms of power.
Right, right.
But we still need to also, like, but he's still Captain America. Like, that, not that it means more, but just, in a weird way, it kind of does. Like, it's one of those things, if you can have another character like Martian Manhunter, who has all the powers of Superman and more, but there's that Supermanness, which still pushes him just close to that edge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, like, when they open the gates, Black Panther just takes off running for it, and Cap just comes up behind him. But please note, Captain America comes up on his left.
Yeah!
And that was fucking beautiful.
Yes.
Because, you know, like, Falcon's flying up there somewhere being like, dude, just fuck you.
Nice. I did not catch that. I did not notice that detail. That's great.
Once I saw, he's like running and catching up with the guy, I'm like, again? And then...
On your left.
On your left, yep. And, you know, obviously they're not going to stop it to say it. I thought the whole Thor thing was a great way to... You know, because at the beginning you're like, well, he's not throwing lightning around. Well, no, he's in space.
Hey, good point. Yep.
And also... You know, the hammer was his focus. Like, we've seen that he's not great at this without the hammer yet.
Right. Yes, exactly.
Once he taps into it, he can do it. Like, you know, in the Ragnarok, like, whenever he figured it out, he could, but it's not his instinct. And again, in space, where are you going to get this from, necessarily?
Where's your lightning? Yes, exactly. Yeah.
But once he has a new focus and a stronger focus, fucking
right.
Duck. Like, he enters the... But, I mean, they really carefully did Thor's entire storyline, you know, with the hammer thing, to show off the fact that these other guys are human, but they're more than human. This is a god.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's, yeah, so yeah, it's fun. They've parceled out, it's fun, like I was watching it, the way they were parceling out his powers. First showing him helpless, and then showing him gaining the power, and then coming in full strength at the end.
Well,
and,
you know, taking on the full force of a star.
Yeah. And being
to
and
hold
being,
the forge open, like
right, and
this
being
is
the
a god,
yeah, the, being the only sort of figure who can actually probably take on Thanos one in like one on one scenario.
Well, and that was the other interesting thing. I mean, because again, when Thor enters the battlefield, it is just like, oh, look, a god has entered the fight.
Yeah,
because it's just I almost wanted them just to run the very first few bars of the Immigrant Song, but it wouldn't have worked. But it would have been funny. But it wouldn't have worked.
That's true. Hey, I wanted the sort of like feathery sort of like like blown dust resurrection, like not resurrections, deaths at the end, to be just like everybody going, I think something's wrong, and then just explode into like blood popping sound.
Nice.
But it would not have been as effective. But it would have been really funny.
But no, I do like that again, and this harkens back to Age of Ultron.
Oh.
Yes, Thor is, you know, essentially the mightiest Avenger, as much as Hulk is also incredibly, you know, the mightiest
right.
Avenger. And in this, I do love Scared Hulk, who now won't come out because he's been beaten.
Yes.
I love that. And it opens the door for something, which we can discuss.
Sure.
But, you know, just, again, Thor in full god mode with, like, a king-level hammer. Like, he's taken on, you know, he's king of the gods now because he's all that's left, realistically.
Yeah. I was wondering actually what happens to like is Valkyrie dead?
Well, and here's
now?
The thing is that they mentioned that they killed half the people.
Right, but they also blow up
so
the whole damn ship. So.
Well, but that doesn't mean that she didn't escape with some other people. Like
that's true. Yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah.
I think I don't know if we'll get there in this movie. I think the next one we will though.
I think it's too big a hole to like not. Address.
Well, no, I'm saying I don't know if we'll get it until Thor.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
I don't know if it has a place in this. It might, but I don't think it... I don't know. But yeah, no, just like Thor leveling up and just coming down that battlefield. And yet, like with Ultron, with the no one can lift this hammer, and Cap walks up with the hammer, and it moves. And
yeah.
You get that weird sense, because there's a shared glance
yeah.
where Thor's like, and Cap kind of catches the glance, and then he's like, yeah, I can't move it. And you get the sense that, oh, he could totally lift that. And just like that, it's like, okay, well, you know, yes, you could stab Thanos. We see, like, Gamora can, you know, surprise them and all this. And you can, like, shock him, but, like, Thor can fucking wreck him. But to that same end, Cap catches his hand.
That's
and
true.
Holds the line.
Yeah,
and, like,
that
there,
was...
there's a moment that I can't wait for until people can give of just Thanos looking outright confused.
Uh-huh.
just like, what the shit is this guy?
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, because I mean, the essence of Captain America, like he literally is a shield, in that sense. He doesn't just have a shield. He is shield. Yeah. Yeah.
He can do this all day. Like he does not back, and that's what eventually will kill him.
Yeah.
But the fact that he doesn't back down, and he will hold that line, if he has to, forever.
Yeah.
And or as long as he can hold out. Like it's the Civil War, is it Civil War or I forget what movie? Yeah, Civil War. Where he's holding the helicopter.
Yes, that's right.
You know, it's that you put Cap in this like here's this impossible thing, and he's like, I guess I got to do that now. You know. <it's... laughs> But he's never happy about it, you know.
I think one of the things you see in Infinity War is you get an understanding of how profoundly the Russos and the writers Marcus and McFeely or Feely, I can't remember.
Yeah, Feely.
How they Boba and McFeely. That's what I always think. How profoundly they get these characters and like.
Well, how much they absolutely love Captain America above all else, frankly.
Yeah, no, they clearly they're in the tank for Captain America, but also they had a really good job of marshaling different tones from different properties, the biggest the biggest thing I can point to is the introduction of the Guardians in Infinity War, when like there shows them and like there's even that slow camera movement onto the ship, and they're just, you know, they're playing I can't remember the song now,
Rubber Band, and apparently, you know, James Gunn picked it.
Oh, of course. That makes sense. And you even see Gamora singing along to it. So there's
right.
And that actually shows you more than anything else just how like the relationship between Chris Peter and Gamora has progressed, because they're bonding on this particular level. I thought this is good.
This is how Thor fits in with that tone. And it's like, we can borrow from Ragnarok, and it kind of fits in fun.
Precisely.
And then this is how, like, Stark fits in with that tone.
Yes.
And it's like, yeah, on some level, like, Stark and Quill are cut from the same cloth, except one of them is just hasn't learned all the lessons yet.
Right.
And so it was a really nice job. Like, and again, because you can't just toss, like, here's the Guardians and here's Captain America, because he would just fucking be like, just stand here. Just stand here. You know? Like, I'll be back. You just stand here.
And I think the other thing that really struck me when I was watching this is, like, every time when I saw The Avengers for the first time, I was like, okay, this Marvel film was a war film, this Marvel film was that film, but The Avengers is a comic book film. And then Age of Ultron came out, and I said, no, this is a comic book film. And then I said it was Civil War. But I was kind of wrong every time, because holy shit, Infinity War just feels like the essence of a big-ass crossover comic book. Like, right down to the scenes where, like, all the good guys just fling themselves with everything they've got at the bad guy, and the bad guy's just like, thump, pow, flick. Yeah. I mean, it was just like, they absolutely nailed that whole feeling. Like, right down to this, like, that sort of, like, the tension and the sick feeling I would get when I was a kid reading those books, when you see these people just laid low no matter what they do, and you've got this like smug bastard like just kind of like just tromping over them.
Yeah, how are we supposed to deal with this? And just
and then they have to figure out how to get around power, like that's, you know, that's raw power. And it's funny, and also of course this was. I mean, this was kind of, we talked about arcs, and everybody has a little bit of arc, I mean, pretty much, but the real arc is Thanos. I mean, it's his movie, which is not what I expected. I didn't think I'd be watching a movie about Thanos.
But it makes sense, because, like, all their, like, Civil War gives you enough Zemo in backstory to understand why he's doing this.
Yeah.
Thanos had got none of that. He's just been in little teeny brief bits saying two sentences.
Right.
You know, Loki over the movies, like, you get a sense. Like, you couldn't do the first Avengers movie without the first Thor movie to understand Loki.
Mm-hmm.
And this was their only chance to build up Thanos before the next movie.
Exactly.
Like, that's the thing. This is Thanos' movie. The next movie is the Avengers movie, if that makes sense.
No, I see exactly what... What you're saying. Yeah, no, they actually, I thought they did a really good job of giving Thanos like an arc. I was surprised at you know, and I kind of saw it coming. As soon as they said there's going to be you got to sacrifice something, I'm like, ah, too bad for you, Gamora. That's it. And what's, of course, and the real tragedy of the scene is Gamora doesn't simply has always thought of Thanos as somebody who is incapable of love and only understands him at the truly understands him at that moment, and that's
Right.
the last moment she gets.
And again, I do think, I mean, in the comics, you know, you have to remember, like, anyone who's killed by the Soul Stone, their soul's in the stone.
Yes.
Now, I mean, in the comics, of course, they resolve this whole, like, half the universe is gone, by using the Time Stone, and I think that that would be a huge cop-out in this.
Well, I agree. That would be, I think that would be a shame as well. Because it was sort of like as soon as he like reverses time to pull back vision so he can get the Mind Stone, I thought, ah, okay, I see what's gonna happen here.
Yeah,
But I'm
but
hoping
I
they
think that
figure out.
using the Soul Stone thing will let them undo it.
Yeah.
You know,
Well, yeah, and I
and this way you
kind of.
only undo the deaths that are those, like
Yeah.
all the end deaths and Gamora, but nothing before Gamora.
Right. Yeah, Loki and Heimdall are screwed. They're dead. I
And
think,
possibly Vision.
and possibly Vision. Yeah, I think. Oh man, boy, does Wanda ever get screwed over? She has to kill her boyfriend, which is horrific. And then it just and then like you know
It
Thanos just
doesn't even
shows up.
matter.
It doesn't even matter. Well, he brings him back to life so she can see him get killed all over again. And then I believe she dies anyway. So it's like, yep, good on
Yep.
you. But I think the moment at which I kind of I the ending was still a bit of a shock. I mean, just the fact that he kind of won, at least in the short term.
Sure.
But as soon as Doctor Strange gave over the Mind Stone, I thought, ah, I get it. He's seen all the possible futures,
Well,
and
the
he
Time Stone, you mean,
knows.
yeah.
Oh yeah, all yeah, and or the Time
Well, and he
Stone.
even says, like, when he, you know, he's seen all these futures, also, and he gives the stone over to Thanos, and he looks at Stark, and he says, it was the only way.
Yeah, and
And it's like, okay, he has a plan. Like, he saw something that's like, the only way through is through the darkness.
yeah, exactly. So,
And.
yeah, and like, what can you do when like the person has the cheat codes to the universe? You know, you have to. I mean, it's gonna be. I am very much in the tank for the next film. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's. I don't know. There's a great deal more that I could say.
Oh yeah.
But
I
yeah.
mean, totally. I do think, and just three really quick things. Of course, you know, the Ant-Man movie is going to come out soon and takes place between Civil War and this. Captain Marvel, of course, takes place in the 90s, and you know, thanks to the end stinger, will probably end with her getting this call.
Yes.
So
That'll
they're
be
not affected because that'd be a problem. And I did think about, like, how does S.H.I.E.L.D. deal with this? Because the last episode of S.H.I.E.L.D., and we can talk about S.H.I.E.L.D. later, but the last
Yeah.
episode of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Does mention it.
has a toss, right? But the movie takes about a week, I'm figuring, between the New York event and the Wakanda event. So
Right.
the last three episodes of S.H.I.E.L.D. are going to happen very quickly, and they don't have to deal with the half of Earth vanishes. Next season, of course, they come back. People are already like, well, how are they going to deal with this? Like, they're not going to, because the next Avengers movie happens a minute after this.
Right, exactly.
So they get to just avoid it. We all know that like everyone's going to come back. Like, they can't, you know. The universe can't move forward like that. They already have stuff. So they should be able to avoid it. Oh, the Hulk thing I want to mention really quick. You know, Hulk being scared opens the door for the scariest version of Hulk ever to come in,
Oh, do tell.
which is Banner Hulk.
Oh, I don't know anything about this.
Yeah, there is a version that has shown up that is the Hulk, but with Banner's conscious mind and control.
Oh,
And it is the
okay.
scariest version because if you watch Banner, like even in the first Avengers movie, where it's like, you know, here's this woman, and he knows that like there were people outside coming for him, and here's this woman with a gun, and she's a trained agent, and he still fucks with her. Like, Banner, thinking that he's invulnerable, and with his brain, is the most dangerous thing.
I can see that.
it's close to a Tony Stark version of Hulk. Like, it's just, you don't want to give someone that kind of power and let them win free, because also then he feels like he's been freed. Like, oh, I don't have to worry about this anymore, and I can control this, and it just leads to that, like, oh dear God, bad things are going to happen.
Gotcha. Yeah, there's...
And I don't know if that's where they're going to go, but yeah. It's definitely an option.
I tell you, there's one particular storyline that they pretty much ignored, speaking of Hulk, and that's the Banner and Romanoff romance. Maybe they'll pick it up in the next movie, but they kind of like
don't.
Said... But I know. I mean, they have to acknowledge it in some way, shape, or form. But I was sort of like, oh, I guess they're just gonna say hi and then keep just
this
get right
isn't
past
the time.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's just this isn't the time, and they'll figure out a way to either they'll you know do something, take it off the table.
Yeah, I think of all the eggs that Joss Whedon laid, that one might be the one that they probably wish they didn't have to deal with.
Right, and they're just kind of like, whatever. Yeah. But, you know, before we move on at Avengers, by the way, we do have another sponsor this week.
Oh, excellent.
It being our 100th episode and all that. Our other sponsor is just Geese.
Nice.
I didn't want to accept a sponsorship from Geese for the podcast.
Well, they're
geese
assholes.
Geese are terrifying dinosaurs. And they insisted, and they have surrounded my house. So, for my own safety, we are being sponsored by Geese.
I understand. I'm very...
They do nothing. You shouldn't buy them, but just Geese would like you to know that they're out there, and they're ready.
That's it. They're just
that's
they're
it.
Ready. I know. I,
yep.
I. Damn. I was worried it would come to this. oddly enough, we in the city of Regina, where I live, we have an urban park, which holds a record, I think, for being the largest urban park per capita. Like,
okay.
There is more square footage of urban park in Regina, per Regina, than there is Central Park. You get the idea.
Yeah.
Some time ago, a few decades ago, the Queen, in her infinite wisdom, gifted the city with some Canada geese, breeding pairs of Canada geese. Now the park is full of those motherfuckers.
Well, because they're geese.
And they suck. They are the worst freaking animals.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, like, there actually aren't that geese. There aren't really that many geese out right where I am. But out in Milwaukee, where I frequently end up, because we have a place called, it's spelled differently than the city of Milwaukee that you are familiar with.
Oh, yes, I'm familiar with this weird Milwaukee. Yeah.
Yeah, like, yeah, there's IE and there's EE. But it's where, you know, Dark Horse's offices are, and there's a comic store out there that I also like going to. So I end up out in Milwaukee. And part of the way there takes you past this park, which is geese-ridden. And, yeah, they have, like, signs, like, you know, watch out, there are geese type of thing. It's...
Yikes, yeah. Yeah, they, in the springtime when they've got, like, their chicks, they're particularly nasty. And they shit everywhere. Like, that's they just cover everything in goose shit.
They're fucking geese. I hate them.
And they're our sponsors.
Yes,
they don't
ready.
Really care. They don't care what we say about them because it doesn't matter.
No, they would like to be acknowledged.
And no press is bad press, say the geese.
Right. Anyway, what else do we have for this 100th episode? There was a bunch of other TV.
There was
course,
a bunch of TV.
As always.
There is a tribute. We don't have to do it now, but there is a tribute to our most loyal listener.
Oh, we'll go for it. Go for it, sir.
Go for it. And you'll have to pronounce his last name for me. His first name is Frank.
His last name is Sekovic.
Sekovic. Well,
Sekovic,
Frank.
I think. Yes, I'm getting there. I can spell it, though. So, hey.
Yeah. So I would like to tell our loyal listeners the story of Frank. Frank
Uh-oh.
Was born. He was born in 1925 in Maputo, Mozambique. Just bear with me.
Okay.
Franklin and Franca Sekovic. Despite his advanced age, though, he appears as a youthful 62 years old. His greatest achievement, at least in his mind, is the time he hung out with Jack Kirby in the 70s and persuaded Kirby not to get into Christian comics by saying, "Yeah, that's great, Jack, but why don't you try some New Gods?" And apparently, and the rest of that was history.
Wow.
Yep. No, I'm not done.
Okay.
Yeah. You thought that would be the end of it, but no, there's a little more.
No, there's more.
Frank also invented the skateboard, but his designs
really?
And his yes, he did. I don't know why you would even question that personally.
Sorry.
Well, there's a reason he's not credited though. His designs and his prototype were stolen by one Everett Z Skateboard. That's why Skateboard Industries became one of the richest companies in the non-motorized wheeled slab sector. Now, not many people know how Skateboard Industries fell from grace or how Everett Z Skateboard was taken over by one Kraft Skateboard in 1982. And there is no record of Frank's whereabouts at this time, but keen observers will detect that Kraft Skateboard is a clever anagram for Frank T. Skateboard or Frank Toast.
Right.
Yeah, that, you know, I came up with Skateboard and it turns out it's really bad for anagrams. Anyway, so the question is, who is Frank T. Skateboard? Well, brace yourself, because it isn't Frank, it's Frank's twin brother.
Oh, no.
Also named Frank, who took Frank's place when Frank disappeared in the Alps in the early 50s. Some say he's still alive, influencing things from behind the scenes.
Huh.
And that is the whole truth about Frank.
Last All right, then. Now we know.
Now we know.
And knowing is at least 5/8 of the battle.
That's precisely, slightly more than half the battle.
Oh Jesus! How have we done 100 of these?
I don't know. I don't know, but I wrote that in a burst of inspiration this morning.
Life finds a way.
Oh God. So anyway, so hey, also the best thing.
Yeah.
What aside from the. So there are several best things about Avengers: Infinity War. One of the best things besides the "We will deep fry your kebab" sign, which I in my mind I picture as like "Yes, we will deep fry your kebab," is the fact that there is no Jurassic World trailer before the movie, which I
there wasn't
really,
for mine either.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say I meant to tell you because I discussed last week how I had to, but you know what I mean. I ended up having to go see the fan event version.
Oh yes, that's right.
So, you know, it you go and it was like an hour earlier, and they're like, "Here's your little commemorative coin," which has like a little Avengers logo on the front. Like it's a fairly thick little metalish coin that has like Infinity, you know, written on the Avengers logo, and then the back it's like the Infinity Gauntlet itself. It's like opening night fan event 2018. Like this is a thing that anyone gives a shit about. And they give you like some free popcorn, and of course there's a 3D showing, which I don't like. I actually did get tickets for Tuesday afternoon, by the way.
Oh, smart. Because
so
the 3D version was irritating as hell. Yeah.
Right. And I get motion sick. So, and again, thankfully with the new 3D technology, if I close one eye, it just flattens out normal and doesn't affect my vision.
Oh.
Okay. It doesn't like screw up the 3D at all.
Oh, nice.
I mean, it does. It eliminates the 3D rather, but it doesn't like, if you try to look at it without glasses, it looks all fucked up. It just looks like a normal film that's slightly darker, but then you're just sitting there holding one eye closed, and that's annoying, too.
Yeah.
And again, mostly it was fine. People were quiet, whatever. There was one guy at the end of my row who, during all of the commercials before the movie, and, like, before the trailers,
right,
would kind of, like, almost angrily talk back to the screen.
Oh, that's fun.
Mm. Like, there was a Diet Coke ad, like, the end of it.
Oh, yeah, is that the one?
The actor.
Gillian Jacobs.
Yeah, thank you. I was like, Britta, no. And Gillian Jacobs like, you know, "I drink it because I like it." And he's like, "You drink it because you're paid for it." And I'm like, wow. A, do you expect her to be like, fuck, I'm found out? B, do you think anyone else in the theater, like, is here for your fucking, like, look at me, I'm better than commercials? Like, shut the fuck up. But luckily, once the movie started, he was fine.
That's good. So he was basically dropping truth bombs in during the commercials.
Yeah.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Otherwise, it was fine. However, so they give you... Now, I don't often get popcorn.
Oh, yeah, me neither.
I will sometimes. I don't get, like, their fake butter, but I'll sometimes get, like, a popcorn. I'll get, like, a small popcorn, right? Because I don't know about you. I actually had this talk. I'm going to name drop. I had this talk with Tamsin.
Yes.
The voice of Lucy on Killjoyce. No. We were joking around because, we both just eat pretty much all of our popcorn before the movie even starts.
Oh, me too. Like, when I, like,
yeah,
yeah,
you're sitting there, and you're just like, I'll just eat this. And then the movie starts, you're like, man, now I got to hold this fucking bag. And, But they were like, okay, well, here, like, part of your fan event thing is you get this free, but it's a free large popcorn.
Oh, okay, so there's plenty
this
of popcorn.
This is too much popcorn for anyone.
Right.
But it's there, and so, like, I have to, like, eat, like, a bunch of it just because otherwise every time I move, it spills.
Yes.
There's this huge, wide box of popcorn, and I'm like, God damn it. So I'm eating a bunch of it just to make it not spill, and then I'm still eating because there are trailers, and I'm eating because the movie's there. And it's like, I think I might have eaten, like, as much as, like, two-thirds of that thing before. I was just like, I'm going to be sick. And I'm just like, why? Why would they do this to us? This is just mean. This is just, like, cruelty forcing us to eat this fucking popcorn. Like, not that they were, but you know what I mean? You could choose to not get it, I'm sure. But, you know, if you're like, here, have some free popcorn, be like, well, I want some popcorn, so I'll just get this, and I'll just stop when it's reasonable. That's not going to happen.
I get
So I was kind of annoyed by that. So I go see it this next time. I'm like, I ain't getting no popcorn at all.
Can I get you to hold the line for a minute, Adam? I just have to, there's weird noises coming from the kitchen, and it's either a lamb making food, or it's the cats, like, wreaking havoc. So I'll be back.
I will. Yeah, I figured a little daybreak was in order. We'd been talking about Community earlier. Hopefully Aiden comes back quickly.
Hello.
I'll have to keep singing. Oh, there you go. I was actually just humming Daybreak for a minute there.
No, I'm going to start doing it.
Yeah, I know.
Turns out the sounds were human made. Oh,
that's good.
I have a non-movie thing I need to talk about. This happened last night. Alan and I won some free tickets to a literary event called the Saskatchewan Book Awards. Every year there's awards for Saskatchewan authors, and it's the province where I live here in Canada. So it was like, you know, and they're usually pretty pricey tickets. So we won them, so we're like, oh yeah, let's go. We were sat at table 25. It was a table of lunatics. I have no other
way. In a good way or a bad way?
In a really weird way.
Okay.
Initially a good way, then after a while it was not so good. So we sat down, and I ran off to go grab a glass of wine. And when I came back, Alan was being talked to by this guy who is obsessed with corrupt land deals in the province. There's this one particular corrupt land deal, and he's writing a book, and, like, I said, oh, I have a radio show on Thursday nights. We talk about these things. Maybe you want to be on. And he said, that sounds great. But after a few minutes, I realized that he was probably never going to write this book because he was a crazy man.
Right.
And he had a friend who seemed like a normal guy, but he was, like, crazy's enabler. And the crazy guy ran... Like, he held down a job, which is a weird thing. Crazy guy runs a siding and construction company.
Okay.
And I think he was screwed out of something with a corrupt land deal, so now he's on the warpath. And the other guy takes photos of elite golf courses around the world.
Huh.
And trying to get more information out of him was kind of weird, because he just kept on saying, I take only photos of the elite golf courses. I'm not an elitist, but it gets attention. And throughout the evening, he would talk about anything he talked about. He would say, yeah, that gets attention. So we were between this guy who seemed normal, but was actually sort of weirdly fixated on a few phrases, and his friend crazy man who kept on giving us, like, pamphlets all evening.
Oh,
like, he had different business cards and different pamphlets, which he would give us, and each one was, like, it was just, like, a bunch of fonts and, like, underlines. It was
good
like,
Lord.
Okay, yeah. But also at our table were two women, and it was one of those things where, like, you wonder, like, because these are pricey tickets. I thought maybe these two women won tickets as well, because they didn't say anything. And
right.
They were kind of dressed in, like, sweatpants, sweatshirt and sweatpants. And one of them had, like, a little sort of shawl. And they looked, I thought maybe one of them was kind of on a spectrum, because she looked sort of not just concerned when somebody looked at her or tried to interact with her. She looked literally nauseated. I've never seen this happen before. And so there were some speeches, and then there was the supper, the buffet supper. And we were sort of close to the end of the line because it was one of those ones where they call
right.
up different tables. So we were like one of the last tables, so it was a little while. But they got up immediately. They went straight to the buffet. They came back with, like, two plates each, like, just heaping with food.
Okay.
And they just, they ate all the food. I'd never seen, like, somebody get so much food from a buffet. I was impressed. They ate all the food, and then they got up and they left. They didn't stay for anything. They were just there for the food. I think they just walked in, found a couple of seats, ate all the food,
you know,
and just took off. And I was like, wow, there are tons of people in this room that I know and want to hang out with. And none of them are at my table.
Right.
It was very bizarre the whole night. And I spent the whole night trying to back away from, like, committing myself to, like, making a documentary series and a board game about this corrupt land deal. Like, the guy
Yikes.
Wanted to make a board game as well.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
Well,
anyway,
speaking of bizarre and turning back to pop culture.
Yes.
This episode of Riverdale... I need to discuss it.
Okay,
just
I haven't
for the opening scene.
Please, I haven't seen it, but I was curious if you emailed.
I have, I emailed you about it because I just, holy shit. Okay, so you saw the musical episode, right? The last episode.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, like, you know, at the end of it, Midges is like, you know, they're up on stage and they reveal, like, it's supposed to be Carrie, and she's playing Carrie at that point, and there's Midge, like, dead and, like, pinned to this wall with, you know, blood writing saying that the Black Hood is back.
Right.
Okay, so this episode opens up at her funeral, which obviously cannot be that long after she died, because everything is still in motion, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at her funeral, because, you know, she was one of the River Vixens, the cheerleading group. So at her funeral, Cheryl is singing some sort of mournful song, which I'm like... Why? Okay, fine. But, all of the River Vixens are there, and they're all wearing black versions, and, like, you know how, like, they're normal, like, blue and gold, and then the inner pleats are white? So the inner pleats are still white, but everything else is black, including, like, the logo, like, and so at some point they actually bought, and, like, they have little short capes that are also black, and, like, the little River Vixens logo is black on black on this black top. They bought mourning versions of their outfits at some point in the past. Because they couldn't have had these custom made that quickly. And so at some point in the past, and then it gets even better, because, like, near the end of her song and all this, the cheerleaders raise up, and they have black pom-poms.
Wow.
Like, they full-on had mourning outfits. But, like, cheerleader mourning outfits. But again, they had to have made it at some point in the past, because, like, the crests on the shirt, you know, are very much, like, custom items. Like, that's...
Yeah.
If you're like, well, let's find a black top and, like, a half cape, and then we can find, like, a black and white pleated skirt, I guess, but, like... No, this had to have been thought of in advance. Like, they didn't have time to get this all made in hand. So at some point in Riverdale's history, someone was like, you know, just in case we ever need cheerleaders at the funerals, we should prepare for this now.
I think the Black Hood is actually, like, Riverdale's, like, local, like, couturier. Because, you know, I mean, it's Hood, right? And so I'm beginning to suspect that if you go to, like, the local, like, tailor, that's where the Black Hood will be.
No, it's actually, besides that, which, like, I just could not stop laughing at, you know, they deal with the whole chick mystery, finally.
Oh.
And it's worth just going in cold for, because it's pretty much what you think it is.
Okay.
At least it was what I thought it was. But watching the actress react to it, and oh god, why am I dropping this actress's name? She plays Betty's mom.
Oh, Mansion Amick.
Yeah, thank you. She oversells this, like, in just that beautiful, like, chewing scenery in grief sort of way that is just so over the top, even for Riverdale.
Wow.
It's
like
hysterical.
It. I'm always kind of impressed by Amick, because she, like, the role she played in Twin Peaks just did not hint at sort of the level of histrionics that she can achieve in Riverdale.
I have seen nothing compared, like, this is above and beyond anything she's done to the show to this point.
Wow.
Like, breaking down, sobbing, gulping for air while she delivers her lines.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is just impressive from, you know, just that, like, wow, you actually pulled that off. But no, it's like, the entire episode is over the top in that way that we all fell in love with Riverdale in the first season.
Right.
But, holy shit, that opening. Like, you need to watch, even if you're just like, I don't want to watch Riverdale. Folks, if you can find the opening for this episode, you need to watch it, because holy shit, morning cheerleaders. It was so left field, and just so no one blinked at it.
Well, you know, I would expect nothing less from Riverdale. I mean, Jesus. Yeah, that. So, sometimes I'm on board with, like, their insanity. Sometimes I'm like, come on. But this sounds like a whole lot of fun.
There's also a line that you could feel was rewritten. And you could feel what the original line was and why they did it.
Oh.
But where Cheryl confronts the sheriff, and they finally use the joke, which, remind me about the joke, but and she confronts him, and she's like, you know, you failed at your job type of thing. And I forget the actual line, but you can tell that the original line was, you failed this city. Like, you
and they,
feel
yeah.
it. And they just right. decided to, you know what, we'll just not do it. But you could tell, like, they were like, you know what we should totally make fun of?
You can bovine McFeel it.
Right. And it was just, they dodge it. No, back in the first season when people were like, oh, maybe it's Sheriff Keller who's the murderer of Jason.
Right.
And a whole lot of the fans started using the name Sheriff Killer.
Oh, nice, yes.
So in this episode, like, everyone's pissed at the sheriff because they're like, you know, you said you fixed the Red Hood, the Black Hood thing, and yet here he is killing somebody else. And someone spray paints on his car, like, with the sheriff logo on the door. They spray paint Killer.
Oh, yes.
And I was like, yeah, Sheriff Killer has finally made it into the show.
they listen to their fan base.
Yeah, it was just a nice touch.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I had a random sort of thought rattling around about Infinity War, but about the MCU in general. I have no coherent through line for this yet, but it really kind of hit home that the Marvel Cinematic Universe has a real thing for, like, severed limbs and, like,
okay,
body parts being swapped.
Well, that was
out.
A joke that they admitted that they did with the second movie in each series for a while. Because of Empire.
Oh, my God.
Like, no, they actively did that because of Empire Strikes Back for a while.
Okay, because it's seriously, I'm like, sometimes I'm like, am I like watching like a stealth Cronenberg film? Is this what's going on?
Yeah, no, they were doing it on purpose.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, now, and the more I think about it, the more I'm like, yeah, okay. Winter Soldier.
Right. Yep, you know, so Winter Soldier, yeah. Iron Man 2, like, people lose arms. And it really was just an intentional joke at first.
Hmm. And I mean, and Guardians of the Galaxy, I mean, it's literally a joke. Like,
yeah.
Limbs getting, and body parts getting sort of removed and swapped out.
Well, I did like that paid off, actually, in this movie with Thor's eye.
Yes.
And, of course, I think that they actually started doing that not for, here's a good joke, but there were issues with that eye patch, if you didn't know. And if you watch this movie knowing it, you can see it.
Ah, okay.
A, Hemsworth had an issue working in the Thor movie for a while there, apparently, with the loss of depth perception.
Oh, so they literally...
It's a little harder to
okay.
hit your mark.
Yeah.
But also, they couldn't get it to stay on. Because he'd make various expressions and it would just fall off. So, in this, it was digital. That was their only fix.
Okay.
And you can see how, like, when he makes certain expressions, it doesn't move right with the rest of his face.
Yeah, I noticed. I remember a shot where it seemed a little odd. It seemed like
they realized that, like, they couldn't get away with actually giving him an eye patch, that they were just like, okay, we just have to give him an eye back because this is just mean to the actor.
Right. You know, in Justice League, they should have just had him say, like, be resurrected and say, you know what? I think I'm going to go for a mustache and then just, like, grow a mustache.
You know, in the 90s, when Superman comes back, he has a fucking mullet.
Yeah, exactly. So why not a fine stash? And actually, Henry Cavill actually looks better with a mustache, like, just based on the trailers for Mission Impossible. So, there's something about his face. It's so, it feels naked without a mustache. Not Tom Selleck naked, but a little naked.
But yeah, no, so, the eye patch thing was just even funnier for that.
Oh, yeah.
But it does have that constant through line with Rocket, and, you know, even when he meets Bucky, how much for the arm?
I'm gonna get that arm.
And again, like the callback to the first Guardians with Groot when he just picks him up and spins him.
Yeah,
again, the Russos were very careful with this. There's a lot buried.
Yeah, no, there's all kinds of. Yeah, I love that little. That was one of my favorite little moments. Actually, was Bucky picking up Rocket and just doing. I'm like, hey, that's. And they're bonding. That was pretty good. I definitely want to see it again, and I want to see it in 2D because that 3D rendering was just, my God, that was headache-inducing bullshit. And it's like, what's going on? I don't know, but it hurts. Okay.
Also, great use of Peter Dinklage. If you want to be like, here's our mythological dwarf. Like, he doesn't have to be small. Like, he's a dwarf, and he's recognizably a dwarf.
Yeah.
But he's also a giant, and I love that. Like, that feels like Norse mythology, you know what I mean?
Exactly, and I was glad there was no mention of it, because I thought that would have been a little cheap. I was reading, in Vulture, they had 9 questions that we have about Infinity War, and one of the questions was Peter Dinklage supposed to be acting like that? And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? What was wrong with his performance? I was really confused because I'm like,
I had heard a few people who were like, who thought he didn't fit.
What's that?
Who was just like, the tone for him didn't quite fit. It's like, no, he's like the last of his people.
Yeah.
He did it himself. Like, no, he's a little fucked up. It's okay.
Yeah, wouldn't it be, like he says, like, you know, everybody, like Thanos killed everybody, took my hands, I'm the only person, you know, I'm the only one of my kind left. Like, why wouldn't you be sort of like, yeah, like you say, screwed up and yeah, I was like, did you not watch that? Maybe you were too dazed at that point and you missed some dialogue. I don't know, but anyway, yeah.
Also, you know, the whole Stormbreaker being more powerful than Mjolnir is, oh dear God.
Oh yes.
Look, it's a hammer. It'll still return to his hand. Also, it can use the Bifrost by itself. Yikes.
Yeah. Oh,
there doesn't seem to be anything about it that only he can lift it. So,
Indeed. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Because then the Thanos thing would have been too easy. Because again, you just do the Loki, just put it on his chest, walk away. Put it on the glove.
Oh God. Okay. Here's the one thing that somebody pointed out that just, it doesn't break the movie, but it is kind of amusing. Like, if at the end, instead of saying, don't kill off half the Earth, just say, Thanos, you've got the Reality Stone. Why don't you just give us enough resources?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then maybe lower the birth rate. Like, you know, sort of slowly.
Sure, but he's a fanatic. And,
exactly. Yeah, no, I mean,
actually,
he would have a ready answer.
Of fanatic, the thing we hadn't mentioned at all was the one other return character in this movie.
Oh, Red Skull. No?
Which I thought actually did, yes, and did give him an interesting arc from the last time he was seen.
Right, yeah, I mean, and the last thing he was seen was being consumed by, like, the Tesseract and zipped away to nowhere. Or it turns out to Vormir. I didn't realize who it was. When I was watching it, I was like, oh, some cool skeleton guy. That was what I thought.
Well, I like the fact that it's like, you know, he comes there, he's a Nazi, and we're not going to forgive him or move away from that, but it's that, you know, that he's there, and it's the thing he can never do because he doesn't love anything.
Right. Yes.
And now he's just there for, you know, 80-odd years, whatever it is, however long he's been there.
Yeah.
Because it could have moved him in time, too, God knows.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's just like, this is now his living hell.
Right. And he probably doesn't get many visitors, so, yeah.
Right. And it's just broken him, finally.
Yes. Yeah, finding that out in retrospect was interesting. I like that. Yeah, there's...
I did appreciate they didn't even try to cast Hugo Weaving, because who's going to pay for Hugo Weaving for that much time? And why do you think that Hugo Weaving would say yes?
Right. Yeah, that was good. I love some of the Vormir. I think that planet, that visual design of that planet was really, really stunning. I thought that was, I was surprised actually how much time was not spent on Earth. I thought it would take place largely on Earth on a ship, but this was a whole nother thing.
Yeah.
So, and you know, I thought it'd be start in New York and just end in Wakanda. I knew that, but all the various sort of like planet hopping bits in the way, I was like, very cool.
Yeah, and it was interesting to take something like Spider-Man specifically and just be like, we're just gonna put him in space. It's space not what you would normally think of.
Also, I thought the
Wizard
Black
Punch.
Order,
Wizard Punch.
Wizard Punch. Yeah, the lines are good. I loved the Black Order / Children of Thanos stuff. I wish there had been more Proxima Midnight, because I really like Carrie Coon, and I thought it would be great to see more Carrie Coon. Ebony Maw as sort of his, sort of that high priest, sort of that sort of bone-thin figure was just wonderful.
And, you know, they did get rid of him fairly quick.
That's also kind of a shame. I was like, oh, he was the best one. But, you know, but then they could bring in Proxima Midnight later, which I thought was just
right. I mean, there's room. And there's so many of them that...
Now, is that like a Jonathan Hickman invention, the children?
Yes.
Or the Black Order? Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, those are all Hickman... And,
I can't remember.
Know, they're all fun characters, like...
Oh yeah. No. Yeah, no, they're well done. I mean, it was good to have like especially with Ma, like it's, you've got like these figures of like immense power, but they're not the bad guy. They're just like the people, like they're just like the caretakers. People who like, you know, prepare the way and clean up after. I'm like, yeah, that's pretty good.
Right.
Also,
Thanos outsources and it's fine.
Exactly. Also, if you're waiting to see if for all those people who were like, who would win in a fight, Thanos or Hulk? Well, now we know. At least at this point. Yeah. That was I was not expecting that to happen quite so quickly, but that was
It was a really good. I mean, that opening bit really did make a good way to just go, this is, you know, it's I forget, TV Tropes has a term for it, because of course they do, because they're assholes. I hate that. I hate that whole thing. I do, because it's just it's reductive.
It really is. I know.
And it treats all tropes as bad. But there is that thing where it's like, you know, you show how powerful a villain is. By starting off having them like beat up other characters.
Right. Yeah. What was that? Joss Whedon always had the technique of like, if you want to show how bad a situation or a villain is, you just cut to the toughest guy in the group looking scared, and then you're like, oh, now you know we're in trouble because the tough guy is scared or like gets crap eaten out of him.
Right, and you're like, okay, well, you know, Thanos like, you know, could take out Thor at this level, and Loki isn't a big problem, and also he can beat the crap out of Hulk. With only one stone, so how does he, you know, where does it go from there?
Right. And of course,
it's a nice sell, because...
Yeah, and the thing is, of course, you establish at the beginning that he's just immensely powerful and formidable, and you know that the only thing that can happen from here on in is that he's only going to get more powerful, because he'll keep on getting more stones.
Right.
And it's like, how the hell do you beat this guy? How do we not lose? And in the end, bam, they lose. And even though I could see it coming after a while, it was still like, it still hit pretty hard.
And,
yeah.
And it is interesting because, you know, we know certain things about the next movie. Like, we know that Captain Marvel will be in it.
Yes.
You know, we know that, like, Hawkeye and Ant-Man will probably be in it. And we know kind of who the Avengers that are left are. But also, like, we've seen set footage of things like, you know, Stark using that memory technology thing he has. I think it's called, like, Barf from right. Civil War.
Right, right, right.
And that he's using it to go back and, like, at least look at the first Avengers movie. Essentially, like, the first big alien fight. And you're like, now you're like, okay, he's looking for clues.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, like, because you can tell, like, Ant-Man's there, too. It's just like, what's... Hmm.
Interesting.
You know, what's he looking for? Like, yeah. Is there a thing? Is there, this is how we do this? So it becomes one of those, like, okay, so we know that there's... people are thinking, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I get you. Huh.
You know, there is motion that this isn't going to be just a, now we're going to go and punch him, because that won't work. I mean, they'll be punching. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, no, it's the language of... It's the hero's language.
We're going to end up with a Hulk who's madder than ever. Because he has something to prove.
Yes.
We have, you know, a stronger than ever Thor... Mm-hmm. You know, it's now we see how they've leveled up over all these years, essentially.
Right.
Each character.
Yeah, no, that's going to be... Yeah, I'm...
Or...
Yeah, I'm... Or what?
Or the opening of the movie is like, we have to figure out who's left. Let's see if, like, you know, Hawkeye's still around. And he's like, yeah, I'm right here. And like, we have to defeat Thanos. He's like, oh, I have an Infinity Gem arrow right here. You did.
Yeah. Hawkeye would save the day. That would be like the real fuck you from the Marvel Cinematic Universe to the fans.
You know, I mean, part of me does wonder if we're going to have, like, Ant-Man. Because I think in the Ant-Man and the Wasp, they're going to go down to the Microverse to try to save the original Wasp.
Mm. Yeah, I thought that was... I remember the feeling that it would happen at some point. Well, as soon as they introduced the Microverse in the first Ant-Man, I was like, aha!
But I also then wonder if at some point we're going to get him shrinking down into one of the stones.
Ooh. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, just for some really good trippy visual. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. I'm trying to think of the Marvel artist. He wasn't, not Kirby, but he really went in for
Ditko?
Like... Not Ditko, not Romita or Ditko, Bill Sienkiewicz? I can't remember.
Sienkiewicz.
Yeah, there you go.
What are you thinking of?
I'm just thinking of some of his, like, more sort of, like, outre sort of
stuff. Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, just the Microverse weirdness stuff has always been the Ditko and Kirby.
Yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, it has been Ditko and Kirby.
I mean, Sienkiewicz is way darker. Sienkiewicz, you'll see in, like, the New Mutants horror movie, like...
Right,
you
know, yeah.
You don't
want
to really pull
true.
Out Sienkiewicz for this. that would be weird. But you know, I'm feeling we're going to see some of that. You know, I don't know. We have a year. We'll find out.
Yeah.
I am going to place my official bet, however, that there are two possible titles I can see for this next movie, if we're going to use comic book arc titles.
Okay.
It's either going to be, which I think is the forerunner for everyone's brain right now, is Avengers Disassembled.
Right.
Or it'll be the last of the original Infinity Trilogy titles, which is Infinity Crusade.
Oh, okay. Because War, there's Gauntlet, and then there's Crusade.
Yeah, well, Crusade, you don't do Gauntlet, because whatever.
Yeah. We've already
Crusade,
seen that.
And that could be a thing.
What if they do, like, throw us a curveball and call it, like, Avengers for Fun?
Avengers Funsies.
Avengers for Realsies this time.
How about Avengers The Search for Curly's Gold?
I love that. Avengers, The Search for Thanos' Glove. Or Thanos'
Avengers,
Gold.
Tony and Steve Kiss.
Oh! That's
the title.
There's a thousand ships with that carved on the side. Yep.
Anyway, nice. We are over the hour mark. It is our 100th episode. Should
right
we go on. And play out some music?
Let's play the music.